All right, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome back, everyone.
I'm Richard, and this is my beautiful co-host,
Angeles.
And today, we got a good review, I think, is Critters 3.
Boom, boom, boom! Wah, wah, wah! Fireworks, explosions, the end.
Okay, so this movie, Angeles, you've never seen this movie before?
Nope.
I thought you were in for a real treat. How did you like this movie?
Dude, I fucking loved it.
You did? Fun.
I did.
Your serious opinion right now.
Serious opinion, you know, quality-wise, was not all there, but it's funny. I liked it. I thought it was really entertaining. I would watch it again.
Yeah, it was quality. I mean, it's early 90s, so the effects weren't super great. But no, looking back at it, I thoroughly enjoyed it now as I did back in the day. It was awesome. It was cool to see. And watching it with you was refreshing because you were actually laughing throughout it and really intrigued. So I was happy to see that because it put a smile on my face because This is one of the franchises that I do love.
Big critter.
However, This movie...
Oh, man.
As far as the Critters franchise goes, this is kind of where it's regarded as maybe
one of
the lower quality ones
of the series.
So, yeah, this one went direct to video. There was not a theatrical release in the United States. Angeles found that it was released in some countries. Do you know which countries?
I found 3 countries that were released because I also found the same thing that it went directly to video. In the U.S., however, in France, it was released in 1991 at the same time that it came out in U.S. into DVD. Spain, it was released in 1992, and Portugal in 1993. So it looks like those 3 countries that are right there next to each other got to see the movie in theaters in sequential order, year after year.
Yeah, so this movie did not get the same treatment its predecessors did as far as mainstream appeal or budget by their decision to release this direct to video. And so unfortunately, we don't know how much this movie made in revenue. Usually I like to share that with you guys, but it's even hard to even find an estimate. But I assume movies like this direct to video, it's usually about a couple hundred thousand to a couple million they can make off this movie, which is pretty good. I didn't realize that direct-to-video market. But in the 90s, it really did boom with that, with Blockbuster in our area. I don't know if other areas have it, like Hastings or Sun Rental, those video stores where you're able to make your money by producing these lower budget ones and people could go and rent them instead of trying to convince them to go see your B-rated movie in the theater.
Low budget.
Yeah. So 1991... This was a pretty good movie year. I said this with I Know What You Did Last Summer, like 1997, our last episode. That had some bangers that year. But this year, holy smokes, there is some good ones here too. To top it off, we have Angeles' favorite director, James Cameron. He directed Terminator 2 Judgment Day, taking the number one spot for this year.
Woohoo!
Yep, we have Beauty and the Beast. Disney is now at 91. This is their renaissance. This is when they started coming back. And this is the movie they brought out, Beauty and the Beast.
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
I've never watched Beauty and the Beast in its entirety.
In its entirety?
No, I caught bits and pieces of both the 1991 version and the remake that they did, the live version. Never watched the entire movie.
But you never watched, so you never watched the cartoon?
Not the entire cartoon. I've caught over the past several years.
Now you.
Bits and pieces that I've sat in either with, I don't even know that my daughter watched it all. Have you watched all of them? Yeah, she has. Maybe I caught scenes here and there, but not the entire movie. Anyways.
Fascinating. Now you say that, I don't think I've ever caught the whole movie either. Fascinating. So we have Beauty and the Beast. That comes out. Apparently, we haven't seen it in its entirety.
And then one of my favorite movies, Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, dude. This movie, Oh my God, I could drool over this movie. I love Silence of the Lambs too.
Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, perfect betrayal.
Johnny Hannibal Post. Lecter.
Yeah. Jodie Foster. Oh my God, the whole cast. We're going to have to cover this movie down the road. Would you agree?
Yes. Several awards, best picture, director, actor, best actress.
It swept the Academy Awards, if I remember right.
It was an awesome movie.
All around perfect movie. Number four, we have 4 and 5 here. This was the year of, what's his name? Kevin Costner. Four was Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And then he also started the political drama JFK, the Oliver Stone political thriller. So those movies, did you see any of those?
Maybe Robin Hood.
I watched them both. I'm not a big fan of either, or I could take it or leave it. But this number six, Point Break. Man, you've got, not only do you got Keanu Reeves, you got Patrick Swayze, you got bank robbing and surfing all in one movie, plus Dead President Mass. So you got it all in that movie, which is awesome. Which we got to watch Point Break if you've never seen it.
I don't think I have.
Oh, shit, guys. We're watching Point Break. She's going to tell me Jake Gyllenhaal's in that one, too.
I know. It doesn't sound like it.
And then 7, we have the Addams Family. 8, Thelma and Louise. 9, Fried Green Tomatoes. And 10, Cape Fear with Robert De Niro, Bobby D. Mm. And Martin Scorsese directed. I like Cape Fear. That's a good one that maybe we'll cover too. It's not super horror, but it's horror adjacent and it's definitely a thriller. So yeah, it was a big year for the movies.
Yeah, we also have a couple other not top 10, but honorable mentions. My Girl with Anna Lumsky and Macaulay Culkin. Jamie Lee Curtis was in there too. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Child's Play 3. And Richard's favorite, Puppet Master number 3.
Oh, my God. The Puppet Master series, guys, I'm sorry. What? Even number 1. And you guys can ridicule me for this. Those movies are piles of shit, dude. Okay. Do you have any other movies?
Those are the 3 that I found, besides the ones already listed.
So the horror movies that came out in 91, you've already mentioned a couple of them, but you have Silence of the Lambs, known for its psychological horror elements. You have Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. That's another part of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. Child's Play 3, continuing the story. I believe that's when they send Andy to the military camp. And and Chucky's story keeps going. People Under the Stairs, which we got to watch, came out. And then other B movies that came out along with this one. Notable ones are 976 Evil 2, The Astral Factor.
That's an interesting title.
I love it. Alligator 2, The Mutation. And Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College. These movies are known for their distinctive styles and are appreciated by fans of the horror genre, particularly those who enjoy cult and B cinema. Now, I did a little bit more research on B-movies that year, so I wanted to add a couple more that I do want to see. I've never seen these or heard of them, but I want to see it. Nudist Colony of the Dead.
You haven't watched that yet?
Have you?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God. I was like, what? Dude, I got to know more about this.
No, I just remember that one time you said you were going to move to a nudist colony.
I never once said that, you weirdo. What the fuck? But no, that I'm curious what the quality of that movie is and the story and what the plot is. Obviously, we know what the plot is. There's probably zombies that are naked. But yeah, and then Subspecies and Scanners 2. So, and I don't think I've ever heard of Scanners 2.
I don't think I have.
Scanners, either. The original, is great, but Scanners 2, I don't know. So the state of horror in the 1990s was a little bit of research that I did, and it's kind of due to interpretation, but it really was kind of a low point in horror cinema. We've seen budgets were kind of dwindling down. We had stories kind of cheesy. The some of the costumes and the effects were kind of cheesy. They're pumping them out, but I think a lot of it had to do with having B movies and direct to video, a lot of the horror transitioned to that. So the budgets varied, but they'd be, probably be lower budgets. So that's why you had like Return of the Living Dead 3, Child's Play 3, Critters 3, Critters 4. Movies like that were coming out just because they're cheap to make. And then you can kind of put them in the box stores and people can buy them. I think that's what kind of happened.
And then we have some other 1990s top B-rated movies.
Oh, yeah. What are some of the top ones?
Oh, my God. Okay, so there's a couple in here that actually are personal that I really, really like. The Blair Witch Project, groundbreaking fan footage style. I remember watching that the first time, and I was like, hold on.
That fucking tripped me the fuck like, out, dude.
Well, the way that they advertised it when it came out, too, they made it seem
real.
Like it was real footage.
Well, didn't... So that was one of the first movies that had a website. You could go on the website.
Yeah.
I remember doing that as a kid. And then, if I remember right, they made the people go away for a while too. Kind of like that movie back in the day, that found footage where they made the people, I forgot what it was called.
They made people go away?
Where they went to the jungle. What was that movie called?
I don't know.
Oh, Holocaust. Cannibal Holocaust.
Okay.
So they made them, sorry guys, I know it's riveting, but they made those people go away, and then they actually went back to court. Like they got summoned to court, and then the people had to be flown back in. They're like, we're alive, we didn't really die.
Oh.
They were trying to do the same thing, if I remember right. I could be wrong with the Blair Witch, but it was really effective because that movie freaked the living hell out of me.
Yeah, they did a really good job for its time, for what it was. Yeah, it really got you in there and you're like, oh shit, somebody help him, it's real. It made it feel realistic. Another one that we have in here is Candyman.
Ooh.
Urban legend horror. And then we have Army of Darkness.
Personal favorite of mine.
Tremors. Oh, I like
fucking
Tremors.
Dude, how do you like Tremors? You don't even know who Kevin Bacon is.
How do I not know? What?
Remember, you did not know what Kevin Bacon, when I brought him up, you're like, who the hell is that guy? I'm like, it's Kevin Bacon, Footloose, man, Tremors, Stir of Echoes. And you're like, no clue.
I know Tremors. I'm not good with people and
their
names.
But
I remember
their
characters.
He has a name, I feel like, Kevin Bacon, that you're going to know. I know what I think of it. I'm like, ooh, Bacon. I drew a little bit.
I remember the characters. I remember Tremors. That was freaky. Fucking, you got giant ass worms coming out of the desert.
We got to cover that soon, I think.
And then we also have From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh, I don't know that I've seen this.
Dusk Till Dawn? It has your girl in it.
Girl.
Selma Hayek.
What? Okay.
You've never seen it, and it's got Quentin Tarantino. He actually stars in the movie. As one of the brothers with George Clooney. Oh, man. Danny Trejo, he's in it. Tom Savini.
I missed out on this little...
I'm nerding out right now. I fucking love From Dusk Till Dawn. It's good, man. So, yeah, moving in, let's actually talk about Critters 3, huh?
I mean,
we're nerding out. I'm sorry, guys. We like to nerd out on the movies. It's very nostalgic for me. I kind of go back and think about all the home movies I watched and enjoyed. But with Critters 3, our director was Christine Peterson. I don't think I've ever heard of her before, and for good reason. Some of the movies that I didn't find that she directed a lot of films, and the notable films that she did direct were this film, Critters 3, in 1991, Body Chemistry 2, The Voice of a Stranger, 1992. This was a thriller film as part of the Body Chemistry series, dealing with themes of obsession and manipulation. So I don't know anything about that series.
I've never heard of it either.
So please don't ridicule me, but if I need to know about this, let me know. Because the series, Body Chemistry, could be cool. She also did Slumber Party Massacre 3. So she was doing a lot of
sequels
and threequels. So she did Slumber Party Massacre.
She likes the threes.
Yeah.
For three.
Slumber Party Massacre 3 came out in 1990, prior to Critters 3. And then she also, in 1995, this is the last notable movie that I came across was Kickboxer 5. Moving away from horror, she directed this martial arts action film, which is part of the Kickboxer franchise. Again, I don't know about this franchise. Do you know anything about Kickboxer?
No.
I kind of want to have a weekend, like a Saturday, just watching all kickboxing, movies.
You might pick up a few moves.
So aside from her feature film work, Christine Peterson has also been involved in television and short film projects, showcasing her versatility as a director. But I couldn't really find anything in particular that she did, just that she was in that, and she often had to work within the constraints of a lower budget in filmmaking.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the writer, or do you want me?
Writer for Critters 3 was David Shaw. He is a screenwriter, author among the horror and science fiction genre. He's participated in a lot of movies, television shows, fiction elements, thriller, horror. Some of his more notable films that Richard found, number one being the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. He wrote the screenplay for the sequel on the franchise,
which I think Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey were in those
and
ones.
This particular one?
I think. I could be wrong on that. I didn't look it up, but I believe they are.
And then she also wrote...
He also wrote...
My apologies. The Crow, which is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, The Crow. So I was fascinated because a lot of the research I did, I couldn't find too much of what this guy wrote. But he was on The Crow and he did Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But other than that, I could only find Critters 3. So he didn't do a whole lot of work. I think he more fell in the along the lines of TV work. Like he did TV shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I could be wrong. I couldn't really find anything else on this guy. To go with the cast for Critters 3, though, obviously, we have Leonardo DiCaprio as Josh, a.k.a. Sport.
He deserves a better introduction, Richard.
Does he? Well, I mean, it is pretty stunning to see him. At this time, he was 17 years old playing a 13-year-old.
He was 16, 17. I had no idea. He doesn't eyes where I thought he looked, yeah, like legitimately 13, 14.
He had a baby face. That was crazy. So he plays a rebellious teenager who becomes one of the key figures in fighting against the critters. DiCaprio, we all know, would go on to become one of Hollywood's leading actors, known for his roles in blockbuster films and critically acclaimed performances.
Okay.
So he was sinking ships and killing bears.
And winning one whole Oscar, which is bullshit.
Wow. Oh, you think he should win more?
He should have.
I do too.
A lot of really good films that he's been in.
Yeah.
The other thing, the description that they had for him being a rebellious teenager, I disagree with that.
I thought he was a good kid. Like,
I thought he was a good kid. He didn't like his stepdad. But
which
his
we're
going to
get into.
Was...
this some of the characters are a little outlandish. But no, I agree with you. He was not a rebellious teenager. He just kind of did what he wanted, but he was cool about it. He was respectful.
Yeah.
So before starring in Critters 3, though, Leonardo DiCaprio appeared in several television shows. He had roles in The New Lassie, Parenthood, where he began to build his acting career. These TV appearances helped DiCaprio establish himself as a talented young actor, leading to his opportunity in Critters 3.
Can I tell you a fun fact that I found about Leo in Critters 3?
Please.
After Critters 3, Leo is the only actor to not have been in a sequel to other movies or franchise after Critters 3.
Damn. You know what? He learned his lesson.
I also remember, so I know a lot about Leo, not because of me.
Titanic.
A long time ago, I had a coworker, shout out to Belle. She was in love with Leo. And I learned a lot of
quote unquote coworker. Okay.
Belle, you haven't met Belle.
Okay.
You know Belle.
Okay.
For those of you listening, my daughter is joining us today in the podcast. So if you hear the background talking, she's double checking that I'm not lying. But she was obsessed with Leo, and it was so funny. Every chance she could get, she would bring up Leonardo DiCaprio and how he was so handsome and so in love with
him. Good looking dude.
And I was like, Val, why? And she's like, not only that, she's like, he's not only good looking, but I don't know, apparently he's involved in a lot of social movements, environmental stuff. He donates a bunch of money to a lot of agencies.
Yeah. It's a good for an Oscar campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Finally worked out.
So after Critters 3, though, this is where his career started rolling. So Critters 3 set the tone for him. His next role after this was This Boy's Life in 1993, where he starred alongside Robert De Niro. In this film, DiCaprio played the role of Tobias Wolfe, a young boy dealing with turbulent relationship with his abusive stepfather, played by De Niro. I think right after this, then he played What's Eating Gilbert Grape, which I love that movie too, man. Johnny Depp trying to do the best for his family, and Leo with his like half-witted like brain.
Who was their co-star?
And the mom that they couldn't get out of the
house. No, not the mom. The girl that the Johnny Depp met, Gilbert, fell in love with, and at the end, he runs away with her.
What's her name? Look it up. You got your phone. What's Eating Gilbert Grape is a good one. I like that.
I love that movie. I know I discovered it on an accident and I was like, whoa.
Whoa, when did you see it? Like recently?
No, like, I don't know, like 8 years ago. Oh, 9 years ago. I was like, this is a young
girl. Oh, okay. So it was Juliette Lewis was the one, I believe. Thank you, Vienna. She's our fact checker here today. Yeah. Oh, John C. Reilly's in it? I got to do a little more research on that. But I digress. Let's get back to Critters, guys. So we have, after DiCaprio, which I think he pretty much, obviously, he's the guy of note that we'll talk about quite a bit. But then you have the dad, Clifford, played by John Calvin. Calvin is known for his work on television during the 80s and 90s. In Critters 3, he played Clifford, the father of the Brown family, who is trying to protect his children from the critter menace. But is he really trying to protect his children? He's very, very complacent. We have the daughter, Annie, played by Amy Brooks. Now, with her, she still acts till this day, but she's more on the Hallmark Channel, kind of like those. She's really stayed into the direct-to-TV kind of realm.
But it also seems like she's still a lot in the horror genre. She's done other movies like Monster Man, True Crime, The Hillside Strangler, Sorority House Massacre in 1986.
But she would have been really young in that.
Close for Season, 2010.
Yeah, so she played, I mean, those are movies that I've never heard of, but yeah, so she played in some horror, but from what I've seen, she's still acting very low profiled roles, but nevertheless, still a good actor. I thought she acted pretty good in this movie. Christian Cousins as Johnny, Annie's little brother. He plays in it. I thought the little kid did a pretty good job. Usually, I don't want to critique child acting, you know, because they're kids. And a lot of times, let's face it, kid acting, child acting can be a little spotty, especially in movies like this.
How dare you?
I know, but he did a really good job. I thought the kid was really cute in it.
His little haircut reminded me of Andy and Chucky.
Dude, I did. So I asked, we looked that up. We had to pause the movie. We're like, is that Andy? But it couldn't have been because Andy was about the same age. And that was like, Child's Play came out in what, 88. And that's the notable cast. Oh, we got a couple more. Oh, yeah. We've got Don Keith Opper as Charlie McFadden. This guy is the key character in all Critters movies. He reprises his role as Charlie. He evolved from a town drunk, and I want to say he was kind of like mentally challenged in the first film, to becoming a bounty hunter chasing these critters.
It just keeps yelling that throughout.
I'm a bounty hunter.
I'm so excited.
So he's also known for his involvement in the writing and the development of Critters, which I did not know, which is cool. He kind of took ownership of the movie.
Yeah, he was in the first four movies, 1 through 4.
Yeah.
Critters.
So Don Keith Opper, also known as Terrence Opper, he's an American actor, writer, and producer, best known for his role, obviously, in Critters. His work in Critters franchise stands out as the most recognizable aspect of his career, with his career evolving significantly over the years. So he never reached mainstream stardom. He just kind of stayed in the made-for-TV movie kind of area where he kind of stayed with Critters. After that, we have Terrence Mann. He's a shape-shifting bounty hunter. Pursuit of the Critters, which he's barely in this. I don't think we've seen him, did we? Really?
No, it might have been one of those flashbacks.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. From 1 and 2. You know you're in for a real treat when you start seeing flashbacks of the previous movies. So then you have Frances Bay as Mrs. Menchie's. She, if anybody remembers, is the grandma of Happy Gilmore. And she lived quite a while, 1919 to 2011, and she worked in TV and show a long time.
It's impressive.
Yeah. So that her notable roles were Happy Gilmore, Blue Velvet, The Karate Kid Part 3, and Wild Heart.
It's also in The Wedding Planner with our girl J-Lo.
She is in what?
The Wedding Planner.
Was she?
Briefly.
Oh,
during the ceremony.
That's pretty cool. Oh, I forgot. The last character I hate in this movie. This fucking guy makes no sense. Jeffrey Blake as Frank Longo. This guy, he plays the maintenance guy for the apartment building, and I guarantee took creative liberties and had his character in Topeka, Kansas have a New York accent.
I loved his character.
I fucking hate it.
So funny.
It was cringe, dude.
He was just trying to be unique and different from everybody else in Kansas. He was his own person and had his own personality.
I mean, they could have made like a comment why his like accent was that. Like,
maybe he moved there. He didn't grow up in Kansas.
They could have stated it because it was so blatant. And the other guy that had an accent a little bit that I noticed, an East Coast accent, was a real East Coast accent, not this crappy version of Frank, was Mr. Menzies. He was trying to hide it. But it came out a couple of times in the movie. Mm-hmm. So the older gentleman. So that's that. That's the cast rounding out. So obviously, if you'll ever remember, it was Don Opper as the key actor in this movie. I'm kidding.
That barely did any acting.
Leonardo DiCaprio. But all right, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. All right, we are back. So, we're covering Critters 3. Angelus, do you want to cover the plot of this movie?
I would love to, Richard.
Perfect. Guys, we talked about it right before this. She says, I go through the plots, so she wanted to take a turn at it. So, here it is. Without further ado, Angelus' plot to Critters 3.
Okay, so the plot takes place and...
in
Topeka,
Kansas.
Okay, we start off, we see the Browns family coming in hot. On they make a stop unknowingly, carry this alien critters back home with them to Topeka, Kansas, where all havoc breaks loose. Essentially, these little aliens start hatching everywhere all over their apartment complex.
Well, a basement.
Attacking people. They travel up, travel everywhere. We see a few of the characters come forward as heroes, potential heroes, trying to save the day. And then we get through the end. We lose a couple people on the way. And then we see a foreshadowing into Critters 4.
I think this movie's deeper than that. This has like family situations.
We were going to talk about the family drama
and there's a lot of trauma involved and friendship and a bunch of stuff. So
you guys feel like
it's deep. Okay, Angelus.
Yes. Potential romance.
Yeah. Yeah, there's potential romance. It has everything that a good horror movie should have. Okay? Mm-hmm.
And death.
All right. So to start the movie off, Critters 3, like Angela said, we start with the Brown family coming in hot in their old truck with a camera on the back, singing, what was the song? Candy Mountain.
I thought it was a made-up song until you looked it up.
I did, too. I'm like, what the fuck? Are they just improvising this? Because I was like, it actually isn't halfway bad, but it is a terrible song, guys. It's Candy Mountain something. I can't remember. But yeah, if you can do the research, look it up. It's a real song, and they do literally sing it word for word. I shit you not.
Bridger actually was supposed to sing it at the start of this episode.
We were going to sing it together. We were going to sing it together, but she didn't want to do it. She shit on it. Okay, guys.
I just said I don't know the lyrics.
I had the lyrics.
Okay, my bad. Next time.
So, yeah, they're coming in. Oh, thanks, champ.
Sport.
The can would have worked, but...
Thank you. And Richard has his assistant today delivering soda pop.
Yeah,
what are you drinking?
I was a little parched.
What are you drinking?
They're not sponsors, so it's soda pop.
Soda pop, does it have any specific flavor?
23 flavors in it.
Oh, our natural, I'm sure. You forgot the carbonation.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And a glass, because he's fancy.
I didn't ask for the glass, so... Good job. I didn't want eyes. It's cool.
It's a glass drink like the dad and the landlord in the movie.
Okay, let's get back to this movie. Thank you, Vienna. Okay. So they're rolling in. They're singing the song. They look like a happy family. A flat tire happens. And this is the craziest part. He's like, oh, God, hold on, guys. And they ride this flat tire out for a half mile or so.
To the next wrist area.
Burning up that fucking rim, dude. Like, there's no way. He should have just parked on the side and changed that tire. There was plenty of room to park.
He was determined.
Anyways, they roll up into this rest stop, barreling in. He gets out. They do a little investigation. They're like, oh my God, this is awesome view. We'll go check it out. And... by the way, I want to point out their wardrobes are freaking awesome. Their Grand Canyon 1990s hats. I want one.
Oh, they're like highlighter hats.
Yeah, I got to find one. Those are cool, man. He had a blue one. Johnny had a green, fluorescent green one. And then Annie has one, a pink one that's on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
Just super cool. I like them.
Thrift stores.
So yeah, they're coming in. And this is kind of where they make an... make it known that the mom died?
Yeah, 2 years ago. Mom has been dead for 2 years, Dad.
Yeah, and she's kind of like playing a kind of a needy child. She's like, why can't we just build up houses at this rest stop like Gilligan's Island?
This is where Richard and I see differences in this character.
A little needy.
He thinks Annie is needy. I think she only has one parent, and she wants to spend some quality time with her dad and her brother. No shame in that.
No, I don't think there's shame in it. How she's going about it, though, I would be, if I was the father, I'd be annoyed. I'd be like, dude, come on.
I'd have been like, yes, sweetie, yes, we can live in a happy house.
What about his
trauma?
Have
dinners
okay?
together all the time, whatever you want.
So, yeah, anyways, they're like, okay, don't go far, but go venture off. Drink a Coke and a smile.
And, I thought you said no brands.
Oh, yeah. A soda pop a smile and go off. At this point, little Johnny is throwing the Frisbee. He throws it kind of far down down a little like rock side.
Yeah.
A little steep. So he's going to go down there. He's contemplating going down there. And at this point, we see one of our future A-listers come in.
Dun, 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 dun.
Leonardo DiCaprio comes in, grabs the kid. He's like, hey, what the hell? There's badgers or something down there.
He's like, what are you doing? And who do you belong to?
And Johnny's like, who do you belong to?
I know. I'll fire back. He's like, excuse you.
Again, with the wardrobe, I had that shirt, I shit you not, back in the 90s, Leonardo DiCaprio shirt. Hot. I had that shirt. But I'll tell you what, not only did I have that shirt, I had the matching shorts.
Oh, shit.
So that you was popular back in the day. Dude, it's funny. I think I have a picture somewhere with me in that wardrobe.
If you find it, you should post it to the Instagram.
Oh, I definitely will. I got to
do a side-by-side pose with Leo's outfit.
Oh, you'll see a chubbier version of that outfit. It is unappealing. I look like a little sumo wrestler.
You're so stupid.
I'm a little chancho. So then Annie comes up and she's like, whoa, pretty much accusing Leo maybe being a pedophile.
Yeah. Well, she's defending her little brother.
She's like, you don't know this guy. You don't talk to strangers. He could be about the bad stuff. And he's like, whoa, I don't know you either. What's going on? Leo being Leo, he's kind of cool.
He's like, what? He's over here on his own. But then, you know, they're
I'm just
like,
trying to protect him.
We're here for the same reason. And they quickly start befriending each other. Like, you know what?
And Johnny doesn't give a fuck. He's like, hey, man, throw the frisbee with me. I'm going to go far back. And then then Leo's like, yeah, let's all play together. And then this asshole throws it too far. You always got that one friend that throws the frisbee or the ball way too far. And it's like, dude, learn how to do this. We're all playing nicely. He throws it super far back to where Johnny.
He's showing off.
Johnny's seeing it and where he was potentially going to throw it. And then fucking Leo throws it. So then they go down there and they're all like, oh my God. And somehow there's like 10 other kids with them.
I know. They just appear. Like they all started following him. There's like random kids that were not introduced.
So my thing is at a rest stop, I've been to a few rest stops in my day. Is it ever kids just hanging out, having fun, having a picnic and barbecues and shit?
Not in the recent years that I've seen. Everybody gets off, goes, does their business, and then turns back around. But apparently this is, you know, it's 1991. So maybe this was a thing back then. I don't know.
I'm calling bullshit, man. So there, maybe it's the Midwest thing. I know up here in the Northwest, that is not a thing. Okay. But we had serial killers, you know, we had the Bundys, the Green River Killer. Oh, God. There ain't no way in hell my mom was letting me run around at a rest stop.
With other children.
No. And nor were other parents letting them do that. So.
Well, this is where fucking.
So they go down. They.
Whole parents.
Yeah. So Leo and the gang, Josh and the gang scale the hill. They go down there. They find the frisbee. This is another part of the cheesy ass movie. Was this frisbee, they made it look like it was like deep somewhere, like you'd think it was like over a pond or something. He needed a stick to get it out. He could clearly bend over and grab that, but they were acting like he couldn't.
Yeah, that was a little it's
cheesy
for the theatrics.
Yeah, and that, so when he does go to grab it, finally, after messing with the stick for 10 minutes.
The frisbee just gets sucked down underground.
Yeah. And then bam, our lead character that's in all of the Critters movies, Charlie.
The bounty hunter.
Comes exploding out and he has a Tarzan scream. Like he's like, oh,
that was perfect.
So he does, and that was a recording, and I know I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but you hear that same recording, exact recording, two more times in the movie, and I'll pinpoint it out when we get to him.
Are you gonna do the Tarzan?
I'll do it every time.
Perfect. I'm excited.
Yeah, I don't know why that was kind of I think one of a creative liberties to that part of the movie. But he comes out, these kids should be running for their lives screaming like, whoa, stranger danger, stranger danger. But they're not. They're like, whoa, that's cool. Look at this homeless guy sleeping in a ditch. And he's got, and he looks like a complete unhoused person.
Unhoused.
What's he say? I can't.
Yeah, exactly. Even he's like, you don't play here. He's like, they eat.
He's being super vague about what he's talking about.
He's concerned. He's just always getting at the kids. They should not be there. They eat. They just eat everything they can. And I found it interesting that Leo's the only one that was like, you weirdo, kind of calling him out. Like, you're you're not all there, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then
meanwhile, the other kids are like, what?
Yeah. And at this point, and you know a movie's going to be bad when they do a quick 2-minute montage of what happened in the first and second movie.
Connectivity. Continuity.
Continuity. But no, you know it's bad. Like, they do a deep dive, pretty much run through the two movies.
Yeah, and Charlie's was like, a long time ago, 1984.
Which is wrong, because it was 1986, and they said as much in the same movie, by the way. Mr. Menchie's says 1986.
He says 1986 on the newspapers when shit went down. But, because I just like to throw shit into the mix, what if 1984 is when the little aliens arrived and it took them 2 years to come out and start eating people?
Yeah, but Charlie wasn't aware of them until 1986. And he said 1984.
He went into a coma.
I don't know. He was mentally challenged and a drunk, so. But he sobered up since, and in that, I thought this was funny watching you watch this, when in the thing he's a bounty hunter and he's like, I'm a bounty hunter, and then he explodes into the critters. Like,
it was so, I've never watched Critters 1 and 2, so watching this clip and in Critters 3, I was like, what the hell is going on? You see him in a bicycle, pulls out a bottle of liquor, starts drinking in, sees a UFO fly above him. What's the new name for UFOs? They renamed them recently. Over the past couple years, few years. There's a new name. Anyways, there's a flying thing. And
they're aliens, goddamn it.
It just jumps through and through and through, and there's a man in a bunny suit jumping through a church, and it ends with a bunch of like flash scenes. Here's Charlie suited up. They have some cool looking weapons, and they're like, Charlie, the bounty hunter. I'm a bounty hunter. He's so excited.
I'm a bounty hunter.
My brain was trying to process all that information. I was like, okay.
Her mind literally blew up, dude. It was funny. She's like, what the hell is going on here? Just giggling. It was hilarious. So yeah, we get out of that montage, and then apparently he was telling the whole story, and then that's when Leo's like, do you expect us to believe this horse shit? And Johnny's like, I don't know if Johnny believes in the little kid, but he's like, are you a bad guy?
He's like, no.
No, they are. And he gives him a little crystal. And he's like, if this starts to glow, you run and you save your family.
He's like, okay.
So, and then now Clifford, the dad, he's yelling at him, God damn it, get back in the car. I'm tired.
It's all about him.
So the group disbands. Yeah, fucking Clifford. The group disbands. Now we're transitioning into, we're seeing different characters.
There's the banana dad.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to even cover the fucking sleazeball dude who he's apparently rich because he gives off, he's wearing the rich classic outfit with the sweater tied over on his shoulders.
I call him the banana dad. I don't know if you noticed, he was wearing all yellow. He was wearing like a polo shirt with a sweater around his shoulders tied on the front, like those fancy people that go play golf.
Penciled mustache,
yellow cap. He has a drink in his hand with a little purple tiny umbrella.
Pretty much saying he's rich. He's got money.
All he needed was to stick out his little pinky when he took a sip.
Yeah. So, yeah. And he continues. He's like, oh, man, bald and flat.
Life just sucks.
And they're bullshitting. Clearly, you're supposed to made to like think this guy's a douchebag. And he is. What I don't get at that point, too, there's a critter making a sound like it's in pain or something, and it's making its way to the truck.
That's right. You see the camera down on the ground, like there's something running towards Clifford's truck.
Yeah, and there's a ton of people around, including them. And somehow this critter, you don't see it, makes it underneath the truck. And then as they're rolling out, you see, well, before that, Clifford, the dad, changes the tire, and then he reaches in there, and then he gets some green goo all over his hands. Would you call it?
I call it the Nickelodeon slang.
And that's what it is. People. Yeah. And that must have been huge. It must have been starting at that time, I think. Yeah. Maybe early, late 80s. So he gets goo all over his hands. I didn't even think about this.
Which is like, oh, weird.
Which I'd be like, whoa, this goo is weird. And why am I touching this? Yeah. And I'd be trying to wash my hands.
You'd be curing your sandy hand.
Oh, dude, I'd be dousing myself. So he gets it in. They show a little clip of the eggs underneath being transported.
Sorry, driving away.
So they transition to where we're going. She sees Grover's Bend, which Charlie mentioned when he was giving him the whole rundown of his life being a bounty hunter. And she's like, Grover's Bend, huh? Still doesn't put two, still thinks he's bullshitting. Mm-hmm. Then, so now we transition to the main scene where it's going to be, and that's going to be the apartment complex in Topeka, Kansas. This is a different setting. This is more urban than it was in the previous two, where they're kind of rural Kansas. This is urban, big city, which is kind of a cool backdrop for this. Although it doesn't play an effect, because instead of the big, spacious, atmospheric rural Kansas, now we're just stuck in an apartment complex, somehow making it smaller.
I think it worked for the film, though.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched the first two, so I don't know what that looked like. For purposes of the movie, how big their budget was and the quality of the film, I think it worked. I mean, you have, yes, yeah, an apartment complex, but you move throughout the floors from the basement, you make your way up.
So it was affected. Don't get me wrong. It gave it enough space and enough room to breathe, definitely, because they had different levels to it.
Yeah.
So this is where we meet a guy named Mario. He's being evicted out of the apartment complex. Apparently, I don't know. It wasn't clear. He wasn't paying rent, or there was rats, or what?
There's mention of rats eventually, but I don't think not quite.
What was the reason why he was being evicted?
I don't know that they made it clear for him. They just said, oh, it was time for him to move or something. He said he found somewhere else to live.
Yeah, and he's the one who mentioned, and there's rats. And then this is where we meet that asshole Frank Longo with the New York accent. Like, get over here. What are you talking about? It drives me nuts.
Was he supposed to be metal or emo or goth, or what was the vibe?
He was kind of at that time, that rock, kind of rock and roll outfit. Big city. Black
jeans.
Big city outfit.
I like his vest with all the buttons.
I know. Yeah, it was pretty cool. He was stylish. Mm-hmm.
The funny thing about his character, that's his outfit. And then he makes sure, you know, he's wearing his utility belt because he's the maintenance guy.
And who else do we meet right there before they roll up? Before the Browns roll up?
Rosie.
Rosie.
And what was her name?
Oh, yeah, Rosie in the actual building. She's the bigger lady.
Yes, but there's...
I don't like how they made the comment, like, she's like, oh, you got the elevator working. And he's like, what? No, not for you. It can't hold one ton of weight. It's like, you fucking piece of shit.
I like the bickering. We also meet Marcia. She works for the phone company.
Oh, yeah.
I like their bickering back and forth.
What was the comments he made to her, man? Again, it was bam, bam, bam. He was just really building up that this guy's an asshole.
Yeah, I can't remember what he says to her. He makes an insinuation of some sort, and then it turns sexual. And he's like, yeah, why don't you come look for it? You know, like his privates. And she's like, yeah, let me go get a magnifying glass.
I know,
glass.
But So when she rolls up, she's like, whoa, check your guns at the doors, walks like a man, talks like a man, something like that, doesn't he? And then she's like, oh man, I see you're dating outside your species.
And she said she's talking to the fish, right? Yeah, he's like, staring at goldfish.
Yeah, he's like, haha, very funny. And she's like, yeah, I was talking about the fish.
And then after all their bickering back and forth, you see the truck with the Browns come in.
Okay, this gets me.
Full speed.
Full downtown. Speed. And he's going through downtown. He looks like he's in the middle of the city. And then he's yelling, no brakes, no brakes, while he's trying to wave people off.
And he fucking crashes into Mario's car. This dude's in the process of movie.
Already having a shit day. And yeah, and then he crashes into the back. And then he gets out and he's like, hey, do you need me to do anything? I don't know. You did enough, Clifford, you fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Like... my thing is, was this scene even needed?
Yes.
Why was it needed?
Their family just has so much chaos. Oh, I remember what I said last time. It was needed. So I think it's because he doesn't know it yet, but he's carrying the eggs of the critters. So maybe the critters broke his brake line.
So is that implied? Did they chew through the brake lines?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, because they don't.
It's not clear. They
don't investigate it any further, which they could have said, whoa, this is weird, it looks like something chewed through the brake lines, or because they would have found that green goo all over the place and then maybe found a critter. But you see the critter, like, it makes a noise and runs to the
just
building.
Needed a dramatic entrance.
Yeah. And Johnny finds a little egg cracked on the ground with the goop, and then Clifford, he finds more of the eggs with Frank in the bottom there with the eggs, right? Like the broken window, and he has eggs and green stuff all over the place.
Did he notice them right away?
I don't think he noticed the egg stuff right away, but he noticed like the green.
I can't remember who said this quote, but I wrote it down. I think they might have been talking about Frank. Someone said, guy is a waste of protein. This is not very helpful.
No, he's the world's worst handyman.
Yeah, nobody's wondering where this green goo is just coming. And
so they pan into Clifford throwing away the eggs, and Frank's like, you're next. Implying that he's going to evict him and his family next.
Yeah.
So after this point, we go inside, right? Like,
they go back into the Brown's apartment. Because the background conversation that's been happening so far is that I don't remember what Annie's dad, what's his name?
Clifford.
Yeah, what he does for a living.
He works for the railroad.
For the railroad.
But I think he's a conductor because he has a conductor outfit.
Yeah, apparently. So they're coming back from this trip. And he's
from the Grand Canyon.
And he's going back to work the next day for a couple of days and leaving the kids with neighbors in the apartment complex. And Annie is, you know, telling him like, oh, she makes some comments which kind of signify that she doesn't really want him to go to work. She wants to spend time with him.
Yeah, like it's giving off the vibe that he's gone nowadays.
Yeah,
and so they're being left in the apartment, but they're not alone. They have a couple that watch over them, the Menjis. They're an older couple that we're gonna meet.
Yeah, and then we go back down to the basement. So the cool thing about this apartment complex is they have like dumbwaiter, is that what they call it? To throw your laundry down into the
laundry
base.
Chute.
Yeah, laundry chute for the tenants. And then you see.
Would you use this laundry chute?
No, thank you.
That's fucking weird.
If it was, I've seen houses that are cool, like multiple level houses that have them, that makes it, but not in an apartment complex where other people are going to walk in and see your clothes just laying around.
Yeah, dirty underwear.
In the basement. Yeah, they're going to go through and just see your stuff laying everywhere.
Yeah, I've had a house that had that, which is cool. I never used the feature, but yeah, I certainly wouldn't use it in an apartment complex. And that is the nastiest basement I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and then you see the camera focuses on red underwear that are.
We're not quite there yet. We're not quite here there yet, are we?
Where are we?
Frank gets a call. This starts to paint the picture.
Oh, from the actual landlord.
Yeah, so he gets the call and he's like, hey, and he gets even more annoying about it. Hey, I did my work. I evicted Mario. Now I got to get paid for it. Doing that whole spiel, and it's annoying. he gets up because he hears stuff. He actually looks in the vent and he's like, hey, you're supposed to be doing your work. So he's been releasing rats because it shows rats in a cage. And he's like, oh, maybe I'll give you to the old people tonight.
And then you kind of start getting the picture that the landlord, who as of now, we don't know who the landlord is pushing Frank, who's the maintenance guy, into getting these people to move out of the apartment complex, but we don't know why yet.
No, yeah, but it's weird. We're starting to get the vibe that this is intentional.
It's not just a terrible, shitty apartment complex. They're purposely making it uncomfortable to where people are forced to move on their own.
So I'm pretty sure Mario found rats, and that's why he was kind of getting out of there. It was kind of a dump.
Yeah.
So Frank, he goes in and he's seeing more stuff. He does go into the laundry room that you were starting to talk about. And because, what was her name? Rosie drops all her clothes down. There's a bra that lands on the ground. And this is this quote from him. He's like, I love my work. And he picks up her huge bra. Keep in mind, this lady is a bigger lady. And
they really
not attractive
over in this picture. They have her eating,
and I don't like that
at the start of the movie, on and off. She's just like eating a donut, dumping her dirty laundry down the chute.
So I don't like that they were kind of doing that. I get they're trying to paint a picture of a character, but I just think there's better ways. She was a heavier set character, but nevertheless, Frank picks up her bra and is like, oh my god, like having a like mini erection in his pants
after he made a comment about her being overweight and not being able to go into the elevator. Yeah.
And then he sees the bra, but then he sees on the actual washer dryer her underwear.
Oh,
and it's pulsating, so it's pretty much saying there's a critter underneath kind of moving around. And he goes to reach for it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then he hears something across the way, like something gets knocked over on the shelf. And this is where we get our first victim is Frank, because the critter then attacks his neck.
And he just jumps straight at him and starts chewing at his neck.
Blood splattering. It shows splatter on the floor. He's trying to reach for a screwdriver.
Did he get it?
Yeah, he eventually gets that one knocked off, but then another one comes and gets his chest. This one proves to be the fatal one because now he's on the ground and he's like rolling there and he's like, ugh. And then he makes the comment that, does he say furball or hairball? He's like, oh, hairball, yeah. And then pretty much implies that he's going to get his face chewed off.
Bom, bom, bom. We got our victim number one.
Yeah, victim. Sorry, guys, if you can hear that. My sound barriers aren't very good. I got dogs barking on the outside, so I apologize. So, yeah, Frank met his demise. The next scene is it goes upstairs to Annie and the Brown family. And they're talking about it. She's like, whoa, did you hear that? And again, the complacent dad, this guy is totally checked out. That's the vibe I got out of this. Wasn't it like he's checked out? He's like, dude, I don't even want to think about this. I went on vacation. I did my dad part.
I'm done.
Right? Like, doesn't he make that? Pretty much makes the comment, right?
Yeah, they're done with dinner at this night yet.
Not yet. They're not done at dinner.
She looks at a picture of when her mom was alive.
At that part?
They had, yeah. And then she's like, remember all the times that we used to hang out and do all this fun stuff?
We're not quite there yet. Right here is she starts talking about, because that's later on when he starts to sit down after dinner.
Go on.
So right here, I forgot what they talk about, but they're talking about stuff. Oh, talking about, oh, I'm going to be gone. The Menjis are going to watch you. Be respectful. Give them the check for watching you. And then she's like, okay, I'm going to go check on Johnny. And she goes to the Menjis. That's where we meet the older couple. And they talk about the weird experience they had with Charlie, meaning that guy. And so the old guy, Mr. Menji, he seems to be kind of one of those conspiracy theory guys, right? Because Johnny shows the crystal to him. He's like, whoa, and talks about it. And he's like, they mention Grover's Bend. And that's when he starts thinking, he's like, Grover's Bend, I've heard that before. And it doesn't show up, but he starts doing research on it. Right? And then kind of the pacing of this movie kind of moves pretty quickly because it's setting it up. It's a pretty quick movie. It was only, what, an hour and 20?
Something like that.
You look lost.
No.
In the movie.
Just following my notes.
Is it? Well, what part of your notes are we at? I'm trying to remember. I'm not trying to skip anything.
We go back to who the actual landlord is because he's going to enter the picture soon. So they show him, he's in a car. You can tell again, he has a lot of money. And it's the same guy that we meet back at the rest area. He's in his car. He has little Leo sitting next to him. And he has one of those cool cars that has a telephone.
And Leo's playing an early Nintendo.
Yeah, and he's trying to call Frank back at the apartment complex. And he's like, Frank, you know, pick up the phone. We got plans. And that's when you get the full picture that there's plans for the apartment complex of making a mini mall, I think it was, or some sort of like shopping center. And that's the reason why they're trying to evict people. So the whole thing is, if they can get people to move on their own, then
they don't have to move. They don't have to pay a fee.
But the legal clause there that I kind of see from their conversation with Leo, he's telling him, like, this is why we're doing this, and this is why I'm being an asshole. But he can get people, if he forces the people out, then he has to pay them to relocate them so that he can sell the apartment complex. But if he can get them to move out of their own will, then he also doesn't have to pay them anything.
Right. And Leo's not interested. And this is annoying. The whole time this guy's alive, at this point on, he calls Josh, Leonardo DiCaprio, Sport. So many goddamn times.
And he doesn't like it.
But I don't like it. He says it like 100 times. He's like, whoa, Sport. Hey, Sport. You're going to run this business, Sport.
Yeah. But essentially, yeah, here he gets frustrated. He calls Frank. He doesn't know that Frank is dead. And
this is a funny part, too.
He's like, answer me. You know, if you don't fucking answer, like, this is the end of your job, essentially. And he's going to go in there and do it himself.
But this is the funny part because the critter's picked up and then they're kind of making critter noises.
And he thinks he's talking to Frank.
Yeah, which, when has Frank ever not said a word? Come on, man. I can already tell. I meant the guy for 2 seconds.
You just hear the me. The Frank.
So, yeah, they're on their way to the apartment complex to kind of do some mischievous stuff. We go back into the Brown family and they're eating their dinner. Again, dad complacent. She's talking about, well, you know what? We're going to have to move at some point. We're going to get evicted, knowing this. Like, what are we going to do? And he's like, you know what? That's tomorrow's problem. I want to watch some moronic situational comedy and go to sleep. That's what I want to do. And she's like, God damn, dad, just love me.
Well, before we go back to this, when the kids are back at the Menjis, little Johnny, he pulls out his stone and it starts shining green.
That's a little bit later, isn't it? Oh.
No. So it starts shining, because they're talking to Mr. Menjis, because he's going on and on about his research, Big Bend, and he's like, the guy back there says that if it lights green, we better watch out.
He asks, what did the guy say? And then that's when the kid says it again.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So he gets intrigued and he starts doing a little bit more research.
Yeah, and then you kind of go back to Rosie again. She goes down into the basement and her stuff is just kind of all over the place. And at this point, she thinks it's Frank because she sees her stuff laying around. It's kind of messed with. And she says, like, oh, Frank, he's touching her stuff.
Implying that he did some misdeeds to her garments. Like,
she picked up a bra.
Yeah. And there had to have been some gooey stuff. Keep in mind, it's green.
It's green. It's not anything
else. It's not human bodily fluids.
And immediately she's like, oh, Frank.
Yeah. And here they start attacking her. She gets stuck on some clothesline. And this is where Annie comes down. It's like, oh, my God. And this is where, again, they try to add the comedy, I think, where she's fending off the critters.
Well, the first place where, seeing that this made me laugh, when they start attacking Rosie, she comes in with her cute little bunny slippers.
Yeah.
And the first critter that comes out, that's all he sees, is the bunnies on her feet. So he like gets ready and pulls out those, the little, what are they? Pokey things. What are they called?
Yeah, he shoots them. They got poisoned.
Right at the slippers, attacking the freaking bunny slippers. And then, yeah, commotion starts, and that's when Annie comes down. Because she was mad at her dad after that.
Yeah, and she hears conversation screaming. That she hears screaming. And this is where she fends him off with a broom, and then the critter bites on, and then for, it seems like it goes forever, she's going hitting it back and forth against the walls.
You hated that.
I'm like, it's going on way too much. And folks, this isn't the first time they go entirely too long on a little skit, because... there's like, I can count at least two other times. So now they're coming up. This is when the movie really starts to go. So they're coming up the stairs. They're screaming. Then old Clifford wakes up. He's like, oh my God, what's going on? Runs out there. Yeah. And he's still being dismissive. He's like, oh, my daughter, she's just psychotic, looking for attention.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. It's just rats. Okay.
Well, and she's like, no, look at, because she has Rosie with her at this point.
And I'll admit, Rosie's entertaining. She's pretty funny. She's like, oh my God, I'm bleeding, and passes out.
The back and forth that they have is funny, too, because Annie's saying, they're small, round, furry, they're attacking, they got teeth. And then here's Rosie. She's like, they're ginormous. They're like hamsters.
Porcupines.
The descriptions are all over the place. And he's like, no, they're the dad, you know, Clifford. He's like, they're just rats.
And he's like, aliens in a basement?
Yeah. And that's when she's like, but look at her leg. And she's like, oh, Rosie, you're bleeding.
She's like, oh, my God, I'm bleeding. And passes out. So then the critters, because they're like, it's those guys. And that's when the... like three critters are right there.
Yeah, and the dad finally gives them some
credibility. They panic and go upstairs. He's stuck. He tries to go for the door, and he gets shot with the porcupine things. So at this point, I didn't know they had poison. Maybe they had it in the first two movies. I know they did, but I forgot about it. But in this one, they have poison, and then they start getting lightheaded, and they're trying to like climb up the stairs.
They're playing fucking bullseye with one of Rosie's flowers on her
on her ass. It was so hilarious. They just kept shooting, laughing at her
right at the middle of it. So her shirt
and her face. They kept panning to her face each time she'd get shot. She's like, oh.
Her outfit, she has like this,
she has a muumuu on,
and then this really really long
muumuu
white shirt muumuu looking thing with red flowers everywhere.
Like, what are the things in the hair?
Oh, she has curlers on her hair the entire time. I told Vienna that was her alter ego.
I could see that. Yeah, so they're going up, and then this is a stupid part of the movie. I don't think they really needed this part for the comic.
I liked it.
they show the bowling back to back. So Annie has a garbage that she's going to throw down the stairs at the critters, and then they show a bowling like clip side by side, and then it's like she hits a full strike as she hits all the critters. They go flying in the air, right?
Yeah, you can tell Annie.
And she's like, yeah.
Getting entertainment out of it. She was getting joy. She had a big smile on her face.
Dude, I'm pretty sure she did a fist like a good old Tom Brady. Yes, we did.
I just want to know why right now, so far, we've seen critters and we've seen three adults that have seen the critters, but only Annie has been really the one to fight them off. She fucking took one, swung it around with a mop, and now she's playing bowling with it. And all the other three adults are just like, oh, no.
I know.
Stumbling all over the place.
So dumb. So, yeah. And then, so they're hurrying upstairs. It's a problem. And it takes a long time to get upstairs because then the landlord shows up.
Yeah.
Him and Josh. And the landlord's, did we say that? He's the stepdad to Josh?
They acknowledge it in the movie coming up.
Yeah. So they go and they work their way downstairs looking for Frank. He's nowhere to be found, obviously. And the critters have all migrated upstairs.
Yeah.
So he's like, and they really paint this guy to be a POS, because he's like, man, they're like animals. They have animals. the animals are animals and the residents are animals.
Yeah, they live like animals.
Yeah. He's like, watch this. And then he goes to the power and he's like, all right, we're taking this. Or no, first they're like, we're going to do a little trick. And then he cuts the phone line. And he's like, now we're going to disconnect them from their social workers.
And then he cuts off the dick. Phone line. Yeah. And right as he cuts it, Mr.
Menjis, because they all need help.
Call with Growers Ben, was it? He was talking to someone.
That's right. That's right. And he's like, oh, man, I just got off the phone. They mentioned Growers Ben.
Yeah.
And so then that's not enough, though, for the landlord. Now he goes and finds the breaker box. And he takes, what do you call it? Casserole, something casserole.
I don't remember.
Oh, anxiety casserole, something like that. And cuts it off, shuts the power off completely. They go upstairs to investigate and see what they can do.
He's an asshole about it. They knock on the Brown's door first.
Well, then they see a door. They're like, holy smokes, did a rat do that? And he's like, well, someone's going to be paying me for a door.
Yeah.
And he hears a TV. He's like, whoa, they must have cut into the main emergency power.
I'm thinking that they're so desperate to sit there and watch TV as a power them out.
I don't know why, but I like this, the line he delivers. He's like, this is the landlord. I have matters to discuss. As he's walking in. And this is the stupid part of the movie, though, because the power got cut, right?
Mm-hmm.
But before this, we didn't mention it. The Brown's TV shorted out. It didn't work. So he mentions to Annie, hey, go bring your battery-powered TV in here. I need to watch TV to sleep. Sets this whole thing up. So the TV's playing. They got Julia Childs on the TV.
On a cooking show.
Yeah, Julia Childs. And there's three critters sitting there. And I don't know what's the landlord's name?
Mr. Briggs.
Mr. Briggs. I don't know what they're thinking with this. Like, you're going to be sneaking up on three individuals. That's like
in the dark watching TV.
Yeah, you're setting yourself up for failure there, bud. And this is where he keeps calling Josh sport and gets like, pissed off.
I don't like it.
He's like, we're in this together now.
Yeah, and he walks in, they're closing, and he sees from the back, it does look like their heads.
Yeah. But they're moving around like critters. Like,
and he walks in there, and then Leo, you know, at this point is pissed. He shuts the door.
Oh, yeah. He's like, fuck you, Dad. I wish you were dead, and shuts the door.
And he and Mr. Briggs gets stuck in there with the critters.
And this is where he gives a high-pitched sport. He's like, sport!
Let me out!
And then Josh hears him getting attacked. And he's like, no, let him out. He just wanted to talk to you. He just wanted to talk.
Thinking of their people still.
And then, so it runs in, and what's her name?
Marcia.
I keep forgetting these names. I'm sorry. They're just not of note for me. I keep forgetting them. Her name's Marcia.
Rude. Yeah.
She's coming around, and she's got, for some reason, and it'll play a part, a flare in her hand.
Ready.
A roadside flare. And she's got a leather glove on, man. She's a badass. So she's walking through. She meets the Annie and the two that are kind of passing out, Clifford and Rosie. And Annie, and she's like, holy shit, okay. Helps them go find help, then goes down and runs into Josh. Josh is banging on the door. She's like, whoa, simmer down, kid. She goes in and finds Mr. Briggs and is murdered.
Notices that it's the critters, yeah.
Which, where are the critters in at that point? Where'd they go?
Hiding.
Why are they hiding?
Ready to attack. Because they started to move again, I think. And then they shut the door again.
Oh, that's right. She quickly shuts it. And then they go upstairs with the rest of the crew at the Menjis house. Menjis.
Yeah. And then Josh, you know, he's scared. He's like, but my dad, he's my stepdad. And she's like, sorry, there's nothing we can do for him now. He's gone.
Well, she's like, who is he? Do you, your stepdad or your dad?
He's like, no.
My stepdad. So now they're at the Menjis. They're starting to form a plan. They're like, we got to do something. We have no phone line or anything. We're stuck. And they're at the doors, pounding on the doors. The critters are. Right?
Yeah.
So they're trying to find weapons. Old Lady Menji gets a meat cleaver. She's ready to roll.
A comical size.
Oh, hilarious. For that old, she's an adorable old lady, and she always does that.
It's not a normal size cleaver. It's like an oversized.
I love it. That's pretty much the weapon, though. Other than, do you know anything else?
No, they didn't really have much.
Mm-mm. So, but when before they get into that apartment, I believe that flare plays a part now into this. Solely, the only reason they had this flare as long in this movie as they did is so she could shove that flare down her critter's throat and he'd fall down the clothes chute, the hamper chute, and catch fire on all the clothes.
Yeah.
So some of this movie is a little...
The one thing I wanted to know, so Rosie, you know, you see her for a couple of scenes wearing a couple different outfits. Mm-hmm. She's always wearing her hair rollers. I just wanted to know, where is she going? Usually you put them on, you're trying to get your hair done and go out, but...
She's getting ready for church, man.
Laundry.
Yeah. So they arm themselves with whatever they can find. They quickly find that they're stuck. So they don't know where to go, but then they find an access in the ceiling. So they go up there, and this shows pretty much full access to, you can get to the elevators, you can get out to look outside. So they try this, right? They go to the vents, and Marcia goes out, and she's like, whoa. Leo's like, you could do that? And she makes the comment, I could do anything. I work for the phone company. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. What's that mean, dude?
You work for the phone company. You're a badass.
Oh, my God. And he's like, okay. So she has a plan. She's going to scale the side of the building and then tap into the phone line and call for help.
But before they make it all the way upstairs, all of them?
Mm-hmm.
Although the door is closed, they're keeping an eye on the door to see if the critters are going to, you know, break through.
Mm-hmm.
Magically, you just start seeing them come out of the cupboards.
And you have a great... So, while they're up there, you have a great scene
that takes place.
Which, I can kind of get why they get a comparison, especially in this movie, to the Gremlins. Because they're doing Gremlins-like stuff now.
They are.
And you in particularly love this part of the movie because you're pretty entertained. You were laughing the whole way through.
Funny.
It was. But one's drinking soap, dish soap, and they're eating the tarts.
And they're like cheering him on. He's like holding the bottle in his hand. And he's kind of like, oh, do I do it? And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's like starts chugging this bottle of soap. They're just eating everything that they can. They're fucking just laughing.
The ham and beans that the Menjis were eating. The ham and beans. One eats that. He gets a little gassy.
Bloated. His belly gets all big and he farts.
You hear a audible pew.
Yeah, they have their own little language.
Sorry about that, guys, if you hear that. Obnoxious engine.
Yeah, you can hear a little. They have their own language.
They do. It's
funny. I thought it was a really funny scene. The one that chugged on the soap, he's laying on the sink, burping bubbles.
And then the one with gas, they start throwing food at him.
Yeah.
So they're having a pretty good time.
I mean, you gotta make the best of it.
So then Marcia, she ends up, and that you could see fire too when she's scaling the wall, right when she gets out there. She doesn't pay no attention to it. Which you'd see it immediately. And you could see it off their skin, like in the video as they're recording it. You could see fire flames, like you can see the color bouncing off their skin. And they don't pay attention to it until she falls. And then they're like, oh my God, it's a fire. Watch out.
Meanwhile, Leo and Annie are bonding over dead parents.
Oh, yeah. Even though her mom didn't die like Mr. Briggs did.
Yeah, but they're having a bonding moment. No, but the other thing that was funny was when, before Marcia went down there, she tells him the plan and lays it down and she's inside. And she tells him, she's like, yeah, any calls you want me to make for you?
Oh, yeah.
Because her little reference for the phone company. Yeah, and she goes down, starts making her way out down, you know, trying to be the hero and rescue everybody, make her way out of the building. And then going down, she trips? Did she trip or did the line just give out?
So that's when they see the fire. Like, oh my God, that's a fire. She looks, she's like, whoa. No, and then, yeah, then the wires give way. Her leg gets trapped. She's dangling there. And they do a little, like, I assume it's for comedy, but there's a, she's like, oh God, phone booth. So she has, she's going to try to make the call. So she's swinging
with her arms
back and forth,
pushing herself, which
the scene goes way too long.
If you look, okay, so Marcia, the character, she looks like she works out. One of the earlier scenes, she's wearing like a short sleeve shirt. This lady works out. Ripped. She has pretty big fucking biceps. And she, all she had to do was just straighten her foot straight. And it would, because it wasn't like, the wire wasn't tangled around. It was just one little loop around her foot. So she had just straightened her foot. She would have come down. If she had done like a head push up, she would have come off of it. But no, that was, she was not ready to give out.
No, for comedic purposes, they left her tied up swinging to the phone booth, trying to make the back call. They come back to the scene and do it again.
She swung on that thing for like the last 10, 15 minutes of the movie. It felt like,
oh my God. I was like, dude, that's stupid. So Annie, she's like, fuck this. I just seen Marcia fall off. She's hanging. She might have died. She's like, fuck this. I'm going down the elevator chute. So this is where she does. She goes down and she goes to one of the levels and she sees the critters and she's in a bad spot. And then we get our second Tarzan intro from Charlie.
Okay, you gotta do it.
And he comes in guns blazing, but to only shoot it once and misses the critter and hits the wall. And then he tries to shoot again, and lo and behold, the gun's jammed. So he's like, oh, man, does this sometimes. So they work their way to the
elevator.
Yeah, the elevator.
The one thing that I found, it was in, so he's arrived the first two movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this poor guy is just struggling to climb out through the elevator door.
He's a bounty hunter.
I don't know. Maybe he would have had some crazy skills to climb an elevator and survive.
That's what I'm saying. He's a bounty hunter. But yeah, he's out of shape or something. So
the other thing,
they scale the elevator though to escape. And he trips the thing and then the elevator does the classic. You know how it either goes down really fast or up? Well, it shoots up all the way to the top where they need to be with the rest of the folks.
I want to know which way he came in. Did he see Marcia when he walked up to the building and was like, there's just some weird lady dangling
from the I want to know, how do you get all that information like to where they were at?
Oh, what's happening?
Like Charlie showed up.
Yeah, because nobody else outside is coming to help them. Nobody, or maybe somehow Mr.
Menji mentioned it. No, he did. He talked to him and they got cut off. Oh. But how do you get all the information where they're at? That's weird. And how do you get there so fast?
He flew.
Because he didn't look like he had a car. He looked like he was a transient living in the park, a rest stop.
And then the thing, once they get back up, he hands Annie and Josh the gun to unjam, and they're just like swinging it all over the place, pointing it at different places. I was like, well, away from people, please.
Yeah. And he gives the rundown. He's like, I'm here to save lives, kicking ass and taking names pretty much. And they do have, it's hilarious. Rosie's smitten by this guy. He's like, whoa, who's the hunk that Annie came in with?
Her role started unrolling.
And then the music was all like, what was it? Was, how would you describe the music?
A little romantic.
It's like wow. And it focuses on Charlie's fucking goofy ass face. But he takes control of the situation.
For the most part.
And then, so the critters get wise, and they see they can go up the elevator chute, and they do go up the elevator chute, and then he's like, quiet, you can hear them.
Oh, Charlie tells them, yeah.
And you can see bubbles coming out the side.
The fucking...
But the first person to contain one is the Menjis.
Mr. Menjis. Yeah.
He has that old blanket, which they had to point out that they put this blanket up years ago. She's like, oh, do you remember this? He's like, yeah.
What were they using it for years ago?
I don't know.
Because it wasn't, that hole was inside their apartment complex.
Yeah. So he has that. He traps one.
Josh beats it.
Yeah. He's like, I hate you. You stupid. And so he beats it, but then one of the critters
Manjis.
But the critter shoots Josh first, and then Mrs. Manjis has her meat cleaver and cuts that SOB in half, which was kind of a cool scene. I like the half critter that you see.
Just splash, gosh, everyone, was it green goo again?
Yeah, and just the side, like you could see the side image of the split in half critter. Nice. But now Josh is out. He's down for the count. So they got to escape. He gets his gun going and the explosion happens to where now they can get up to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like the roof. So now they're up on the roof. They're screaming. They're like, help, help, help me, somebody. And this place is dead.
Yeah, there's no one.
For a big city, I guess, Topeka, Kansas shuts down completely. There's nobody around.
Yeah, I was surprised there were no like neighboring buildings where that could have heard all the commotion going on next door.
Which kind of makes sense since you can drive around downtown with no brakes and
there's no traffic. Town.
So they're screaming. There's no help. One of the critters did survive. The one Josh was beaten to death in the blanket was still halfway alive. So it shows that. It pans to that moving around. And they're all up there trying to figure it out. Well, Annie's like, hey, Johnny, get away from the ledge. He's like, Marcia's down there. And she's like, I don't care. And now it shows the little crystal still glowing green. And the critter is going to go. And this is where we get our third Tarzan. You try it.
No, this is your thing.
You got to try it. You try it and I'll do it.
Charlie to the rescue.
He jumps in the way and then he flies off the building, lands on their motorhome or camper.
Yeah.
And he saves the day.
He saves little Johnny.
Yeah. And he doesn't save little. Well, he saves that part, but Annie runs, miraculously grabs Johnny right when he's falling off the side. And
pulls him back.
Yeah, pulls him up. So all is well.
Finally, the fire trucks start showing up and someone.
What's his name? Charlie. He has a little kebab of the critter that was on like a satellite. He looks at it. He goes and hides that shit, dude. He wanted to keep it.
Gross.
Because they said we couldn't find anything.
Anything.
Like no evidence of this alien stuff. Yeah. Everything got burnt up.
Marcia's still dangling. They pan back to Marcia and she's still dangling.
With her arms crossed, she's like, it's about time. So yeah, everybody's saved. Oh, so when Johnny gets saved, Annie's holding him, and this is where the dad finally shows value and he loves his family. He shows up and finally pulls Johnny up, and he's like, you know what? I know where my value is. I love you guys.
You're more important than my work.
Which, yeah, come on.
Now,
a little late, again, Clifford.
Yeah, he's spent this movie either doing his own thing, you know, just trying to relax, get ready for the week, or fucking drowsy, drugged up from the spikes from the critters.
I like how he was ineffective. That was awesome.
He was just there to be a supportive role.
Yeah, it was pretty much the elderly and the kids saving the day.
Yeah, kicking ass.
And then Charlie, the mentally challenged guy. I'm sorry. The guy is clearly deranged.
He's not.
Well,
he's unique.
He's unique.
He has a unique character.
He's what we call, he has the shine. Let's just say that.
Oh my fucking. Ignore Richard.
He's my favorite character. I like him. He's kind of like the Dewey of this.
The Dewey of this?
Mm-hmm. So that sums up the movie. Clifford ends up getting a job with the phone company. So all is well. He can spend time with his family and his wife's still dead.
Wow, you're so positive.
That's what I got out of it.
He values family. He saw that, you know, he could lose them at any moment.
But so the movie does end with a hint that the critter's menaces might not be completely over, setting up a potential sequel, which we know is a sequel. Charlie ends up finding them, puts them in a container, shoots them up to space.
Oh, yeah.
And then this is where Critters 4 happens. They end up in space. So I can't wait to watch that beauty. I bet it's pretty good. We watched the trailer. You're pretty excited on that. So yeah, throughout this, the scenes, I think they're pretty effective. They shift between horror and comedy, providing dark humor through their actions and interactions. The movie's structure follows a typical horror narrative with initial warning, a buildup of threat, and a climactic confrontation leading to the resolution. So it's a pretty standard movie. I know how you felt in the beginning of when we started talking, but now what's your overall opinion?
I like it.
What would you rate this movie?
Out of 5, I would rate it a 2.5.
Damn. 3.
2.5.
So like, I Know What You Did Last Summer. You rate this right no. there with it.
I Know What You Did Last Summer was a 3.
You said between a 2.5 and a 3.
I don't know that I said
Do
that.
We got to go back?
We got to go back.
I'm gonna, so I was entertained by this movie,
but
I certainly am not gonna give it a 3. I'm gonna give this a lower. I would give this, if we do the point system, I'm gonna give it a 1.9.
Damn.
I enjoyed the movie, but as far, it could have been done a lot better.
It could have been done a lot better. It was 1991. It was a B movie. I'm giving it a 2.5 for the comedy. I think it also because it reminds me of the Gremlins.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
That one scene. Yeah, this one more so than the other ones reminds me of the Gremlins. So would you recommend this to people to watch?
Yes. Watch it one time in your life.
At least
you
once.
You won't regret it.
Yeah.
Or you might.
I would say at least watch it once. It's entertaining at the very least. I mean, you're not going to be scared. You might laugh a little bit.
A lot.
A lot. We laughed. So I think we found what our humor is, because this movie encapsulated some of the humor we like, because we were laughing pretty much throughout the whole movie.
I was laughing at how ridiculous some of those scenes are. It makes it funny.
Mm-hmm.
The pushing.
So this movie, though, was not regarded well from people. It got a low rating, like Rotten Tomatoes. I'm pretty sure it was a lower percentile. It got like a 0%.
0%.
Yeah. It didn't hold up.
IMDb has a 4.4, Metacritic 3.7.
Oh, so it's out of 10, though.
Prime? No, out of 5.
Oh, shit.
Prime had a 4. People really like it over on Amazon Prime. And then Letterboxd, they gave it a 2.4 out of 5. Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. That's what I was going off, Letterboxd. So maybe over time, people are showing appreciation for it.
There's mixed reviews for sure across.
So do you think this movie holds up? Does it have a legacy?
Does it have a legacy? It has a legacy as a sequel on its own. I don't know. I think there's a lot of similarities, and some similarities, again, back to Gremlins. So I think it makes it memorable if you've ever watched it. I'm going to be honest. If you had never like brought it up, I probably wouldn't have gone out of my way to watch it.
Yeah.
But
aren't you grateful that you did?
So forever grateful. It changed my life.
Oh my God. She's being sarcastic. So I do think this movie has a cult status. I think it's celebrated for its campy charm and low budget aesthetics. I think people really do enjoy that. I know when I'm looking back at that, I know what I'm watching, guys, and I'm in for it. It's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, if you know what to expect.
Yeah, it's nostalgia and retro appeal. Do you have any reviews from people? This is kind of a new segment, and I want to bring in our guest that's been patiently sitting here waiting, Angelus's daughter, Vianna. And she found a few reviews that she wanted to share with us on this movie that she found entertaining.
So there's some people that either had nothing to say about the movie, and there's some people that felt pretty, you know, wholeheartedly about the movie. There was one review that I found on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not kidding. It's like a whole couple, few paragraphs. They give it a 3-star review.
What are some highlights of
they
this?
They essentially go and summarize the movie, everything that happened. They compare it to some of the prior movies.
Who's got the time for this?
Someone really wanted to, okay?
You're the only person that read that in its entirety.
I was intrigued. I was like, whoa, somebody took a lot of time. Their description of some of the characters. This person said, sure, the characters are a bit stereotypical. The Fonz typey guy, the elderly couple, the Ripley-esque female, the overweight comedic relief female, the Sheriff-esque looking little boy, the annoyingly sensible goody two-shoes daughter, and dastardly landlord, and of course, Leo sporting the same damn haircut he's had for so long.
That's fucking true, dude.
They said,
but why fix it if it ain't broken?
Overall, it's a pretty decent third follow to an already solid foundation.
Oh my god.
Same shit all over again, set within an apartment block, menace from the bounty hunters, light relief, splattering of gore, decent creature visuals, a very Danny Elfman-esque opening score, and inevitably daft cliffhanger ending with a cameo. Dun, dun, dun.
So that's a good one. So, Vienna, you've got one. Do you want to read a couple? Yeah, here, you got to get close to the mic.
So, one of them says, why did I watch Critters 3? 1 star. Someone else said, it's Critter time. 2 stars.
Okay.
Pete Kino, there will never be a movie to top Critters 3. 5 stars and a heart.
Oh, shit.
Someone else said, damn those Critters. 3.5 stars. Someone else said, I can't believe Sonic 2 ripped off Critters 3. 2 stars and a heart.
Did they get in detail?
No, that was it.
Oh, my God.
Someone else said, Leonardo DiCaprio learned his grooming behaviors here. 2.5 stars. And then the last one I found said, the critter puppets are better actors than the human actors.
At times, I would have to agree. So, Vienna, how did you feel about this movie? What are your thoughts and opinions?
I thought it was funny. I don't know.
What would you give it a rating?
A 2 out of 5.
You gave it a 2 out of 5?
Yeah, it was funny.
It was funny, but it didn't hold up?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Compared to movies nowadays, I don't think so.
Okay, cool.
A couple other reviews that
thanks,
I found.
Thanks, Vienna. Angelus wants to talk now.
Anything else, Vienna?
No.
So that's going to be a new segment too, folks. We're going to bring Vienna in as much as we can.
I found a review by Tawny the Terror on Letterboxd. He gave it a 4 star. And he said, maybe I should be ashamed of how much I enjoy this, except I am not and I never will be. He thinks it was great, adorable, and he was on the Critters team the entire time. Exquisite 90s DTV wonderfulness, and he's here for it every single moment.
And what was the stars?
4 stars. Oh. And then this other reviewer, Shukone, 2 stars. He said, Leonardo DiCaprio not really helping to fuck with the omnivorous little hedgehogs. Instead, focus on nailing the hot underage girl. I don't know about that. But he said,
I didn't get that vibe.
I did not get it. And then this one, the last one I'll share, this one made me chuckle. It says, disappointing sequel and film debut for Leo, who is so young. I swear I've got bologna in my fridge that's older than him, and this was a 0.5 star.
Oh my god, that's a good one. Well, thanks for the reviews, guys. Angelus, where can they reach us?
You can reach us on our social medias. Give us suggestions of movies to watch next. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and of course you can catch the podcast episodes on Spotify, iHeartRadio.
Pretty much anywhere podcasts are available, except Apple.
Amazon Music. Apparently, Richard has beef with Apple.
They have a beef with me, man. I can't figure it out. So I'm trying.
It sounds like it's user error. Not an Apple thing. Yeah.
So look at our Instagram. We're constantly posting.
Yeah.
We'll have interesting polls for future movies. We want to hear critiques about us, how we're doing. Please, thoughts, suggestions, ideas would be great.
Yeah, and then go to our Instagram, check. I will be uploading some pictures that our friend shared with us. She went to a horror monster museum in Nevada, and she shared with us a pretty awesome picture of one of the critters.
Yeah. So, and that summer, I think we need to go for a vacation in the summer.
The Tom Devlin Monster Museum in Nevada. Yeah. If you've ever been, if you haven't been, go check it out. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Send us pictures too. We'll post it on, we'll gladly post it on our Instagram. Well, so with that, guys, we got to get going. I will talk to you later. Stay well, stay obsessed.
Stay cool.
Stay cool. All right. Bye.